Radio. This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
Yassas, everybody. You know the drill. We've started this podcast to help anybody who's remotely interested in trapping and neutering animals. We're the help we didn't receive when we first wanted to get involved, and we want to be your new friends in the TNR world. Today, you have me, your host, Adele, and I'm here with April King. Thanks for joining us, April.
It's really nice to be here, Adele, and to see you again.
You too. It's been a while. So a quick introduction. April is from an organization called KOTOR Kitties. KOTOR is a city in Montenegro. Originally, April discovered the plight of free-roaming cats while living in New York. After learning how to TNR in multiple cities in the U.S., she took a trip to visit the city of KOTOR in Montenegro, which is known as the City of Cats. However, she quickly learned there was no sterilization program in KOTOR, or actually in Montenegro in general. So that's how KOTOR Kitties was born. And while the original goal was sterilizing a modest 10 cats, KOTOR Kitties TNVR program has truly transformed the lives of free-roaming cats in this tiny Balkan country. Welcome, April. Thanks for being here. And when we begin, we like to gently start our conversation by asking our guests a question of how did you start thinking about animal rights or animal rescue?
I don't know that I did, but as a 10-year-old child, we had our first family cat who my parents didn't spay. And it made a huge impression on me. That was 1964, 65. And it was right about the time that Lady Bird Johnson was doing her Make America Beautiful and Don't Litter campaigns, and Nationally Humane Society and the ASPCA and others started picking up on the idea of don't litter. And I just thought that was the cleverest thing. And my goal in life became to make sure cats got spayed and neutered, because living with the alternative was not a happy thing. And I really loved my cat and wanted her to be happy and healthy.
Yeah, that's a really good reason to get them neutered. Thank you for sharing that. So you started in the U.S., as we said, and you eventually made your way to Montenegro. Could you ever have imagined you would be heading up one of the largest sterilization programs in this tiny little country of Montenegro?
No. I learned how to trap in 1981 simply because the New York neighborhood where I was doing community organizing had lots and lots of cats living in basements and crawl spaces under the buildings. And it was very slow work to make friends sitting on the sidewalk with a dish of food. Like, it took me, you know, months to catch my first cat. And then I heard, oh, there's a way to do that with a trap. So I was off at that. It was like, oh boy, let's go.
That's awesome. Yeah, it's really interesting, I think, to point out that a big point of learning about all of this was in New York. Because I think I lived for quite a few years in and around New York, and I've never seen a cat there. It just had not occurred to me that cats live. And ultimately, I wasn't looking for them, right? Because they are everywhere and they live in basements, as you said. And there's huge spay and neuter efforts happening all across New York, all across the different boroughs. But I just wasn't looking. And I think a lot of people just don't see the sheer number of cats who are being fed in colonies, who are being spayed and neutered. So that's quite cool. And for anybody who's unfamiliar with Montenegro, this is a little country in the Balkans. I had no idea where it was as well when I started my journey, and I hadn't planned on ending up there. But April and I met when I spent 2 months in Montenegro and was just kind of starting out, learning about spay and neuter and really wanting to get involved, but not really sure how. I was just kind of running around with a little plastic carrier thinking, how can I get these cats to go inside? And I found KOTOR Kitties, and April and I spoke, and I met the team, and I realized they had this really cool program running and just didn't have enough people to do trapping. You had all the equipment, you had the vets, you had all these processes set up and had been operating for quite a few years and doing thousands and thousands of sterilizations. And so I jumped in, did some trapping for 2 months, met April, learned about the island, learned about the vets. And yeah, it was a really, really cool experience. It was one of my first larger scale spay and neuter experiences. So I'm really grateful for that. How often do you go to Montenegro and pick up a trap yourself these days?
I try to go once or twice a year and stay for a couple of months at a time. I was locked down there for 6 months during COVID, so I was able to do a lot of trapping then. The vets there did not close the way they did in the U.S., but because we are highly dependent on tourists for our funding, there were no tourists, so our problem was not access to vets, it was lack of funding. So I've had, because of health problems, I had a year when I only had a 3-week visit. And then, you know, like I say, I had 6 whole months during COVID. So, but yeah, once or twice a year has been the goal. And now as my husband is reaching retirement, that's going to become less practical or less doable simply because I self-fund my visits. And so our family income will be greatly reduced.
Yeah, definitely. I think there were quite a few instances I heard where people used COVID, where there were less tourists, to get a big jump on trapping because there was nobody to like interfere with trapping. But also, you weren't really supposed to be out on the street. So you had to get special permission here in Greece to go out and trap, and you couldn't be out past a certain time, and it was a whole covert operation. That's really interesting. So speaking of funding, how did you guys make your way around that problem of not being able to rely on the tourist donations anymore? Did you switch strategies or did you just do less sterilizations during that time?
Fewer sterilizations that year. You can see a drop off and then a pickup again. So the goal starting out was to become tourist dependent or largely tourist dependent and to learn how to build relationships so that long after people had left Montenegro, they remembered how important it was to keep helping those cats. And we're not good at that. Like that's, as far as I'm concerned, one of our huge failures. But I had an experience in nonprofits with grant writing. So we had like a 5-year bridge of successful grant writing while we were supposedly gaining these skills of, you know, building relationships with tourists to take over when the grants sort of had run their course. And so now we're struggling in that, oh, we haven't learned this, have we? We better get busy.
Okay. And do you have any practical advice for anybody who is approaching this? Either they want to branch into more so grant writing to receive larger donations so they can sterilize more cats, or to take advantage of being in a tourism dominant area and connect with the local tourist community?
I think diversifying is the best advice I can give. So don't count on grant writing to sustain you long term or to sustain the daily, everyday spay neuter, because it's an interest that sort of comes and goes with different funders, whether it's PetSmart and Petco charities or, you know, other organizations. You just can't count on it. And for an American nonprofit like us that works in Europe, there's a lot of closed doors simply because we work outside the country and they want to focus the funds here at home, where, of course, we do have a tremendous problem. Not so much in the Seattle area where I live, like that's where I learned my high volume spay neuter lesson of how you can turn around the situation for animals in a few decades. But in the rest of the country, there are many places that have not reached that level yet. I have no argument with them wanting to spend money here. But at the same time, European funders look at you and say, you're wealthy Americans. What do you need us for? So, you know, it's kind of a catch-22 situation.
Yeah, definitely. And I think especially when it comes to writing and applying for grants, there seems to be this perception that being a registered charity is a vital component of that. Would you say that was a big reason why you were eligible and receiving some of the grants that you did?
Yes, definitely. I think so. Early on, we looked closely at, could we have a relationship, contractual relationship with a representative group rather than forming our own nonprofit. But within Montenegro, there were no other organizations that shared our focus. I mean, the primarily dog related to begin with, and there was just no interest in cats. They're primarily rescue related, not spay neuter, not TNBR. So I just, that wouldn't work. And then here in the US, they were very askance at sponsoring an organization that worked abroad. It just didn't fit with objectives here. So,
right.
You know, okay, we'll be a 501c3. And then we're actually now a partnership of three groups of Coder Kitties. So we have the U.S. nonprofit, which was the original. And then some of the volunteers from the U.K. formed a registered charity there, which allowed us to take advantage of the 25% gift aid from the government, which is really a nice thing. And then the goal all along was to start to involve the folks locally in decision making and in running the organization. So we have now an NGO equivalent in Montenegro.
Cool. Yeah, for anybody that doesn't know, this gift aid program is for UK charities. And as you said, can have a huge impact because you can get 25% of the original donation, of the taxes that are taken.
The original donation from UK citizens, I guess it is, or taxpayers.
Yeah, so that's a huge benefit.
So we're registered for England and Wales.
Cool. Okay. We were talking a little bit about this on our first episode, actually, when we were speaking about TNR versus TNVR. And how a lot of times when we are applying for grants, there's always these like rigid lists of things, right, that you have to meet in order to be applicable and receive the grant. And sometimes it's charity registration. But a lot of times I've seen it's cost, right? So these organizations want a really low cost and they just want it to go towards the sterilization in as high volume as possible. One question we were discussing is how to approach if we want to incorporate vaccinations into our sterilization protocol, how to approach that with funders and grants, because at least from the grant providers that I've seen, they don't really view vaccination as something they want to give to. They want to give to the sterilization surgery itself. Do you have any experience with that? Like, were you able to apply to include funding for vaccinations, or you felt it was kind of excluded?
Yes, it's actually a very messy topic for us. So when we first started out, it was just a group of Americans and Montenegrins, and our goal was to quickly show how high volume of spays could affect things. And we purposefully did not include vaccine, but we wrote our mission statement so that that would be added when we felt like we had stable funding, we built enough numbers and stability in the program. And that was set out at the beginning by conscious choice. And the problem was that we didn't really, the only word I can think of, because at my age I lose words a lot, is indoctrinate. New volunteers. So when the UK group started, they had no such cultural memory in their DNA and had no interest in funding vaccinations. So this was something that when we felt it was time, the American group took on alone. So it became quickly a messy sort of a, oh dear, how are we going to split this up? And now we're solely responsible for the fundraising. And I'm not saying that the UK group is wrong in their attitude. I'm saying we started from a different place and didn't share that, which is unfortunate. So we started fundraising just off of a GoFundMe, and then I started writing it into grants where I could. And so we've successfully now had two tenders, they're called, sort of like grants, from the municipal government of Qatar. And they're perfectly willing to pay for, they see having the tourists reassured that the cats are vaccinated to be a really good thing. So they have no question about paying for that. Another German funder actually insisted that we had to provide a rabies vaccine. They wouldn't fund without it, which was interesting.
Yeah.
We haven't had anyone turn us down on including vaccines in a proposal. So we do work directly with a distributor to get it for as low a cost as possible. So we started out with a goal of €5 for an FVRCP and €2 for rabies. We were a little bit over that for FVRCP, and we're actually up to like 6.06 now for the infectious disease vaccine. And I think we're still at about 1.75 for rabies. So obviously, the more you buy at a time, the better. Our problem is that Montenegro gets a very limited supply of any vaccine. And so we can go for months without having any available to purchase. And then, oh, you can have 300 units. Well, if you're spaying 3,000 cats a year, that doesn't go very far. We also started with the thought that we would be vaccinating kittens that the people we work with were caring for as part of a foster program, that trying to protect their work would be the greatest benefit maybe we could do. And what we found was that the vets were highly resistant to following the sort of shelter protocol that you would give in the U.S. that you would use for very high-risk kittens in, you know, situations where people are fostering 40 kittens. Hello, if that's not a shelter, what is? There are 40 kittens from the street with no known background, lots of diseases because there's just no immunization being done there, blah, blah, blah. So when we realized that that wasn't going to work with kittens, because the follow-up vaccine can start at 4 weeks, but if you're not doing follow-up vaccines, you know, you're wasting your money. So then we put them into the spay-neuter program and began doing as many as we could of our surgeries. And we had been keeping track all along of the fact that cats weren't being vaccinated. So we had that in our record-keeping system. And then when it started, we can track that and we can see where we're out of vaccine and can't purchase anymore, which is really sad.
There's a lot of really interesting points in there about your specific situation in Montenegro.
And there are still people in Montenegro who do not believe in vaccination at all.
Yeah.
No COVID vaccine for them, no rabies for their pets. Just no. So that's an interesting sort of side issue that we've had to deal with.
Definitely. Definitely. And like you've pointed out, getting people on board with sterilization and then also vaccination. I mean, this is an important point to the success of any spay and neuter project, right? Like you want the public to accept you as an organization and the choices that you're making, even if they don't take care of those animals directly, but also the local people who are really involved. You want them to be on board and everybody providing the same type of medical care, especially if we're talking about vaccination, because like you said, if you're just doing one for a kitten and you're not doing the booster.
Well, and if you're starting at 4 weeks, it's recommended that you do every 2 to 3 weeks thereafter until they're either 16 or 20 weeks old, just because you don't know when maternal immunity will run out, if they received any maternal immunity. And so many kittens are thrown out in Montenegro with, you know, umbilical cords attached. I've received pictures of them still wet from birth. So, you know, they haven't gotten that colostrum ingestion at the first. But, you know, if you vaccinate at 4 weeks and don't do those follow-ups, it's, you know, it's like a wasted vaccine. So,
right. And the process of them.
And you can share the research with the vets. You can share the research with people. You can share all the recommendations. I mean, even the World Small Animal Vet Association came out this year recommending a sort of shelter schedule. And, you know, it's still like, who are you to tell veterinarians how to do their job? So,
yeah. So to your point, this process of nursing from their mother is so important for them getting the antibodies that they need to fight off infectious disease, which is even more important when we consider, I think when we've spoken before, we've talked about how much infectious disease we see in the Balkans, in these countries. I mean, the respiratory and eye issues and all these, you know, things that everybody just calls cat flu. It's all these different types of infectious diseases that can be prevented, but they can also get them from their mother. And so, yeah, there's these interesting overlaps. And I think it's important that you've pointed out that you're giving both rabies and infectious disease vaccines, because there are a lot of countries, especially around EU and UK, that mandate rabies, just like you connected before with the funding, like German organizations, maybe they have lower rates of rabies. So they're going to mandate that you're providing rabies vaccines because they see it as a strategic approach. And then other countries in the Balkans have higher rates of rabies, right? So they're going to understand that it is important to keep that herd immunity, even if rabies is not rampant in cats. Just like we don't see rabies rampant in Greece, but we still want to vaccinate to provide that herd immunity. But infectious disease, that's really the important one, isn't it? Because there's so many costs related to that spay and neuter programs incur because they're trying to treat all of these diseases that they get from birth, basically. What are some of the common conditions you see in Montenegro, and have you seen some difference in their health since introducing the vaccines?
I can't say we're vaccinating at a level where we see differences in health, other than I have helped raise a couple of litters of kittens where they were vaccinated starting at 4 weeks. Even though they had their mother, we didn't know anything about her immunity, and none of them had any eye infections. And I'm so proud now seeing them as adults that are going on 3 years old. It's like, oh, you're so beautiful and your eyes are so normal. And I know that having vaccinated them helped make that happen. So, but can we look around? No, there are just tons of kittens with eyes popping out and bulging out and huge lesions and seals shut with pus. And that's just everywhere. You do what you can. And I guess one of the biggest lessons is not to let perfection get in the way of making progress. Because, you know, there are days when you stand back and go, oh, I stand back and say, what are we doing here? There's just the high quality we aspire to is so far from being here. And yet we know we're changing lives. And this is the first trip. I was there 3 months and just got back. And it's the first time that I haven't found a dead cat that I had to move out of the road. Not a single dead cat. And I only found two dead dogs my first week hit by cars. And for me, that was huge. Like, I was afraid to say to people, oh my gosh, I can't believe this change. But it was quite astounding to me.
And assuming this is in huge part to all of the work that you guys and other groups have done all across Montenegro to stop this cycle, right? To stop the sickness before it happens, to stop the litters before they happen. And you've achieved that because you've done huge amounts of sterilizations and quite a few collaborations with, you know, local government, like getting funding for vaccines and another groups and locals and things like that. We're going to talk about that a little bit more. We're going to take a quick break and then we'll be right back speaking with April.
You know the expression, cats have nine lives. Well, what if you can give them one more? The Give Them 10 movement is on a mission to help give cats an extra life. How? With spay and neuter. Spaying or neutering your cat helps them live a longer, healthier life. And it helps control free-roaming cat populations too. Learn more about the benefits of spay and neuter and meet Scooter, the neutered cat, at givethem10.org. That's givethem10.org.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
Okay, we're back with April from Code to Our Kitties, and let's get right back into our discussion. So, one thing I want to ask you is about all of these partnerships that you've done with different volunteers, with different groups, and all different cities across the country. Can you tell us a little bit about that? How Code to Our Kitties has partnered with other organizations and got volunteers involved?
I would say a lot of hesitation among the local NGOs when we first started, partly just that they were focused more on dogs than on rescue. So I will say I'm really grateful that NVO SPAS, SPAS, which is a takeoff on dogs, liked our idea of focusing on Spay-Neuter Awareness Month, one of the early Februarys when we were active. And we did a collaborative project with them that actually sort of, I think, 14 other NVOs signed on to help sponsor. So for me, that was a huge win that we were suddenly on talking terms and collaborative terms with another group. And we differ with many groups in terms of pediatric spays, in terms of TNR, sort of the idea of releasing a cat that hasn't been bandaged, collared, and held for 7 to 10 days is still very controversial there. So we differ on pregnant space. So we have so many areas of difference, but we were able to come together finally on one collaboration and lay aside all those differences. We just want these animals spayed and neutered so the overpopulation starts to reduce. And that was wonderful. There are some collaborations. Then we've had some expats, one with Tivat Tabbies. Nicole Darcy lives there in Kotor now, and she's the founder of Tivat Tabbies, and she is really active in arranging spay-neuter and running cats around. She's a school teacher, so she does a cat day at school every year and raises funds for spay-neuter and for feeding. So that's been wonderful. And then Karen Leong and Kenrick Erickson are a couple of volunteers from the U.S., and they were about to start a spay-neuter program when Coder Kitties started. So they initially started helping us, and then they formed their own group with their own funds called Spaying It Forward. They come to Montenegro probably once a year and work around Kotor Old Town, where they've developed relationships with people. And now they're working in Albania to address the problem sort of along the border of Montenegro and Albania. And Kenrick still maintains our database for collecting the online spay information, which is wonderful. So that's sort of it. And then the municipal government of Kotor, we approached pretty carefully after close to a year with just some facts about what we were doing. Like, we'd been flying under the radar till that point, but like, here's how much money we've invested. Here's how much tax dollars have come in through our spay neuter program, because we are paying the 21% tax on those surgeries. And here are some ways you can help us. And we didn't ask them to build a shelter. We asked them for signage. We asked them for help making tourists more aware of our program. And that actually went down well. They changed, for the first time, they, I think it was 2022, changed their applications for NGO support to include animal welfare. They had never done that. And specifically to include spay-neuter.
Amazing.
Yeah, I thought so. And the overall Montenegrin government at that point also put out tenders, they're called, that included spay-neuter of dogs instead of just support for feeding or support for a shelter improvement. It was specifically for spaying and neutering the dogs. It did not at first include cats, and they are no way interested in talking about targeted spay-neuter, because their goal is to make as many NGOs viable as possible. It's not really to change the population or change the animal welfare. But, you know, they've authorized those funds to be spent. And then most recently, the Kotor Tourist Organization has started fundraising for the cat and using the money to pay for spay-neuter, pay for food. And last year, when a cat was shot with an air gun and paralyzed, with an older cat within Old Town that had been known, you know, for many years, very popular cat, they immediately posted about it, made sure the vet bills were all covered. She did die within like 4 or 5 days. And it was the first time they ever took a political statement on how wrong it was to abuse a cat that way. So that was a huge step, because they had never wanted to be seen as promoting spay-neuter so openly, or promoting even kindness. I mean, the basic message of kindness. And here was this man lecturing the local population about, this is not who we are as a people. Don't do that. So that was a nice thing to see. And, you know, it's not just us. It's many, many tourists. It's many expats that are settling there. The Russian influx has really helped promote animal welfare. So there are sort of a bunch of factors that came together all at once. And it's nice to see.
Yeah. Those are all really inspirational points of the impact of this work and all of these different groups of people coming together and starting to see a little bit of human behavioral change in addition to the field work that we're doing on the ground. I think this idea you pointed out before of, we have these different ideas of pregnant spay or how young to neuter a cat, or even to introduce vaccines, but still, we all at least need to get them spayed and neutered to try to stop this constant cycle and have some kind of positive impact. So still, let's come together. Whereas I think a lot of communities in animal rescue and welfare like fragment at those points. And they're like, okay, well, then I'm going to go do my own thing and we're not going to work together because I don't agree with you at all. And I think especially around the municipality, right? Like there's so much frustration around municipalities and what they should and shouldn't be doing and their standards of care and stuff like that. We talked a little bit about this on the last episode, how especially in Greece, like nobody wants anything to do with the municipality. No municipal shelters, no municipal vet programs for spay and neuter. But there are points of support and collaboration that can really advance our work. And we cannot do it all alone. And yes, we may have our differences, but you've just illustrated how all these pieces can come together to create a picture of some kind of progress. To hear that like local attitudes have changed and more people are getting involved is really cool as well. What do you think about local attitudes in general right now? Is it leaning towards more being open with sterilization? Are people understanding not just to throw away kittens? Because some years ago, there used to be a lot of abandonment, right?
There still is, sadly, there still is. My theory is they're no longer drowning the kittens up in the villages, or that they're now abandoning them as a chance for life. Just a theory. But because we are still seeing so many abandoned kittens, I think we're finding fewer neonates. I mean, just from what I see on Facebook and what I ran into, more in the 3 to 5 week range abandonment. Like that's somehow a little more humane because they can eat a little bit. But I think people are more accepting of spay-neuter. And the biggest thing that has changed that is not anybody preaching. It's after a neighborhood has been TNR'd, suddenly people notice, oh, it's really more peaceful here. Gosh, I know I didn't want those male cats to be neutered, but wow. Look at them. They're just snoozing away in the sun over there instead of fighting. And people are the most effective way to spread the message. It's like they have the cat spayed because they're a little bit more forward thinking. And then they start talking about what a big behavioral difference it made. And so suddenly a neighbor's willing to try it, or a friend or a family member. And we don't have money for billboards to put those messages up. So it's really nice that that word of mouth has carried so much impact. It's definitely changing. I think we didn't count on the demand for sterilization growing as quickly as it did. So that, you know, was one of the things early on that caught me off guard, was that I thought, well, it took us, you know, 10 weeks to sterilize. Well, we were begging people to spend the money for the first 10 cats. We got 8 of them done and still had funds for 2. And, you know, nobody was coming forward. But once the word really got out, then suddenly within the first year, we had done 800, the first calendar year. Is that what I mean? Yeah. From like October to October.
Yeah.
Yeah. Then the first calendar year, it was actually well over 1,200.
So. That's awesome.
That was just surprising to see after begging people to use up those 10 spays at the beginning.
I remember from Karen and Kendrick's program, Spaying It Forward, they were also offering at one point €5 per cat you'd bring in for sterilization, right? It wasn't just that it was free, but they were trying to incentivize people by paying them.
I think they did that in Albania. We've never had to do that because we have an influx of cats. We no longer advertise on Facebook, but if we ever had someone give us $100,000 or euros to spay and neuter with, we would just put up a Facebook post and be spending that as fast as the vets could do the surgeries.
That's fantastic.
So we no longer advertise just because we don't have so much funding to keep, you know, replenishing our pot, so to speak. But we still have plenty of cats coming in with just word of mouth.
That's really fantastic to see the demand for spay and neuter really change. And you made a really good point that I talk about your example of sterilizing the majority of a lot of these areas quite a lot, because it's this point of doing all of this work, the cats being healthier after, and that convincing the local community that it is a step in the right direction, that there are benefits, like you pointed out, with the male cats not fighting and you know, sick and dying kittens everywhere. They can see the tangible benefits to the cats that they live around in the community, and potentially also feel more a sense of pride and want to communicate with them more, be more involved in feeding, take a little bit more care, and be participant in this success of the animals doing better. And really that starts with what you described as like having model colonies, right? Having model neighborhoods where pretty much everybody is sterilized, is as close to 100% as possible. 100% is hard, but as close as possible. And that really being a demonstration of what could be better and changing attitudes. So that's a really awesome point to conclude our conversation on. Thank you so much for sharing all of this. It's been really interesting to hear.
Thank you, Adele. And thank you for that visit in Montenegro that when we first met, that was just a wonderful opportunity to see somebody really go in and target areas and help produce, you know, the documentation we needed on the cats. It's still not happening. We need more of that. But, you know, you learn, you grow, and you keep working at it one cat at a time.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's such a beautiful place. Like staying in Montenegro is one of my favorite memories of traveling and doing TNR. And it was one of the first experiences I had where I could go and stay in this beautiful place. I was working online, so it was possible. And in my spare time, I was just running around with a trap in these different areas and trying to neuter the whole colonies. And, you know, you were directing me to which vet to go to, and we're coming up against all these challenges and finding solutions. It was my first time, like, learning how to trap at a larger volume and also doing more strategic colony-based TNR. So it was a profound experience, because look where we are now. That's all I do. It was a real turning point.
Yes, which is wonderful. Yeah. And, you know, someday maybe we'll turn into a host spot for trapping teams that want to come to Montenegro and have a vacation where they also help a lot of cats. So it needs to be off season, I will just say, in case this makes the air. Don't plan on coming during the summer. It is gridlocked. Nobody tries to drive cats anywhere between June and the September.
Yeah, definitely. But it's beautiful in the winter months as well. I'm looking at a picture of the gorgeous bay of Koh Tor behind you. And gosh, these mountains, I've kayaked across that bay, is absolutely stunning. It's an amazing place to stay.
Yes.
Cool.
Yes, I agree.
Well, thank you so much for joining us. Do you want to tell everybody where they can find out more about Koh Tor Kitties, any social media or website links that they should know about?
Sure. Well, we're on Facebook, which is at Koh Tor Kitties, and the same on Instagram. And our website is www.kohtorkitties.org.
Awesome.
And Koh Tor is O-N-T-E, K-O-T-O-R, and kitties the way we normally spell it. And at some point, we may have to change our name to Spay Montenegro. But when we started out, we just picked a cute alliteration, not knowing how much was needed in Montenegro at that time.
There was also, I saw a few months ago, a short documentary about Koh Tor's cats and the volunteers that was released. Where can we find that?
I think we have it on our link tree. And that's, it's one of the links you'll find there. So from our website, you can find that, or from our Facebook or Instagram, and click on that.
Awesome. I'll put that in the episode notes as well, so people can go and see that. It's a really nice illustration of the people involved and the cats and how the area looks and stuff like that. So thank you again so much, April, for joining us. We love being inspired by incredible people like you. And we're really excited about this whole podcast adventure in general. April is just one of the many awesome people we've talked to from places all around the world. So for now, we'll see you all at our next episode. And in the meantime, stay out of trouble and keep trapping to save the streets one animal at a time.
Let's Talk Pets every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.